Rainmaker FM is brought to you by Digital Commerce Institute. Do you want to build the business of your dreams without squandering time and money, stumbling around to find the right path, or making unnecessary mistakes? The market is ready and waiting for you, but that doesn't mean it's gotten any easier. Digital Commerce Institute is here to change that. Go to rainmaker.fm/digital-commerce and get the training, education, and community you need to start building your digital business the right way. That's rainmaker.fm/digital-commerce.
Welcome to Technology Translated. I'm your host, Scott Ellis, and this week, Sean Jackson is in the house to talk to us about LinkedIn, and oh man, does he bring the goods. All right, Sean, thank you very much for joining me on Technology Translated, and welcome to the show.
Hey, Scott, thank you so much. Excited to be here with you.
So it's hard for me to believe that most people that are listening to this don't already know that you have The Missing Link, which is a podcast on the Rainmaker Network, on the Rainmaker Network about LinkedIn. And so today we're going to talk on Technology Translated about, call it, a state of the union for LinkedIn and kind of what's happening on the network and what I think is probably the most overlooked network out there.
No, I would agree with that. In fact, I often think of LinkedIn in the content marketing family as that crazy uncle that shows up to the family picnic in a three-piece suit. You know, he may be, you know, part of the family, but you think he's kind of awkward and not really cool and doesn't really fit in with all the other cool marketing kids. And it turns out that that uncle is pretty crazy and pretty fun. And certainly I'm excited to talk about it on my show. So hopefully we'll share some of that with your audience.
Well, for anybody that wants to get more out of LinkedIn, now that we're done patting each other on the back, talk to us a little bit. What's going on LinkedIn? How have things changed? And you know, what's happening over there?
Well, if you're a shareholder in LinkedIn, you probably hate the company because recently its stock price went down by 44% due to its guidance for the future, even though it had and met expectations for 2015. So LinkedIn has taken a little bit of hit in the media lately because of its stock price. But there's a lot more than just a declining stock price that makes LinkedIn pretty fascinating. You know, when I started my show, I was really blown away by one statistic that I still think shocks most people. LinkedIn is bigger than Twitter. And yet, you know, most of the time people are talking about Twitter this and tweet that, et cetera. LinkedIn has more users than Twitter does. And it's only growing. In fact, while Twitter is decreasing in its user count, LinkedIn is actually growing it. So I would say the state of affairs, certainly from a business owner perspective as an entrepreneur, is that LinkedIn is gaining traction probably more than some of the other social media channels like Twitter. And that may come as a surprise.
Yeah, I had no idea. I'm actually a little surprised to hear that myself. How is the engagement different between those two types of networks?
Well, I think there's one stat that I always like to point out is that if you look at Facebook, right, when you post things into Facebook, I think what you're normally seeing, it used to be like about 15% of the people that were following you on Facebook would see your status updates, et cetera. And as everyone knows, over time, Facebook has been changing that news feed. So now only sometimes 3% of people even see what you had to publish out there. But let's look at LinkedIn. When you put an update in LinkedIn, 20% of your followers will see it. Astronomically higher. If you are posting or updating every day or at least 20 times in a month, almost 60% of your followers will see that update message inside the LinkedIn ecosystem. That's pretty impressive when you given the fact that while Facebook is gigantic, it's also very crowded in trying to get out there and have that organic one-to-one conversation with people in their newsfeed. And LinkedIn, because it is so focused on business and focused on professionals, it's getting much higher engagement in certain key areas when it comes to publishing updates and information in the ecosystem.
All right. That is a very interesting statistic. Yeah. We've seen the abuse, I'm going to use that word just outright, of what's happened on Facebook in terms of the reach of posts. It is very much pay-to-play type of a network.
Yes.
Now. So it's interesting to hear that LinkedIn gives you that much more visibility and consistency, even then more so, really adds on top of that. Are you noticing particular types of content? Obviously, I would say business, but beyond that tend to do better or get a little bit more traction on LinkedIn these days?
Yeah. You know, so LinkedIn is introduced several years ago, what they call the Pulse Network. And it originally started what were called LinkedIn influencers, people that the LinkedIn editors selected as being influential. And they started writing on LinkedIn. LinkedIn actually brought in a world-class editor to start managing this, and who came from the news industry. And they really started to build up this Pulse Network to be a publishing source, similar to what Medium.com is, a publishing source where people can start to contribute articles for free into this vast collection and repository. In fact, the LinkedIn Pulse Network is substantially larger than Medium when it comes to people publishing information. Now, inside of Pulse, what we're starting to see, I really want to say the content that seems to get the most traction, at least from my observation, is industry information is number one. You know, what is an industry growing? What's happening in an industry? In fact, there's a stat that I like to share that on the CXO level of companies with more than 1,000 employees, 17% of those CXOs go into LinkedIn specifically to research information. Okay. And they're going to Pulse. They're going in to see what is happening in their industry. And so those type of publications or posts inside of Pulse tend to do very well. The other thing that I think does very well is kind of lifestyle, that intersection of life and business. Those posts tend to do well because they tell a human story, right? I mean, let's face it, you know, Scott, you know, we sometimes tend to play solitaire while we're at work, right? We tend to do business, non-business things while we're at work. And certainly when people are on LinkedIn, they often want those life intersecting stories where, you know, hey, this was something about what it's like to work with my son in my business, or, you know, the commute from hell every day that I have to do. Those type of stories do very well because they're human interests, but they do have that intersection into my professional life. And of course, industry research. I mean, you know this. The moment you put a stat out there, the moment that you say trends of what's happening or how to approach this particular problem or where a particular business is going, those are always going to do well because LinkedIn is a professional network. It's not about posting cat pictures, right? You can go to Facebook for that. It's about talking about the professional side of one's life. And those life points that intersect, as well as things that will help you in your profession, that type of content does exceptionally well.
All right, that's very good to know. Is the Pulse Network something that anyone can contribute to now, or is it just that anybody can publish and some stuff gets picked up on Pulse?
No.
How does that
work? Anyone now. Right now, what happens is that any LinkedIn account holder can publish into the Pulse Network. So if you have a LinkedIn account, you can go right under your profile and you can start publishing to Pulse. The nice thing about Pulse articles is they're also indexed by search engines, so you can see them out there. They will get picked up in in search results. And you just can go in, you can click on publish, and you save it in draft mode. You can upload an image, you can write what you would like, you can embed video in there, you can embed SlideShare in there. And then once you're ready to publish, you add some tags to it and hit the button, and off into the Pulse Network it goes, with all of your followers and connections getting notified in their newsfeed that you just published something. So it's very powerful and very easy. And the best part is it's free. And the one last thing that I really like about it is because everything you publish for free on Pulse, they also provide some really cool analytics. So if you're technically inclined or want to be technically inclined, analytics, especially who is doing what with this content, is so fascinating in LinkedIn because they tell you what industry, what part of the country, their professions. Anyone who likes something or shares something, you get to see their profile. So when you publish something out there, you're getting not only really good demographic data, which you won't get out of Google Analytics, right? You're getting demographic data, but you're also seeing the actual name, image, and person who shared or liked that. I think it's very powerful.
That is very interesting. Do you only get those analytics for what I'll describe as a native article that is published on LinkedIn for the Pulse Network, or is it anything that you share on there? Because I haven't noticed that.
So what you have is, yes, so anything for the Pulse Network specifically, they give you that demographic data. Underneath your LinkedIn profile, you can see, you know, who is viewing your updates. It's not as comprehensive as what you have for Pulse. But yes, they really worked on some of their analytics. For instance, you may see an email every once in a while. These are the people that have viewed on your profile. right? That's another form of analytics, which is also very powerful because think about it. If I'm coming, wouldn't you like to, and this is one of the techniques we talked about on my show, is that if somebody comes and views your profile and you're checking your LinkedIn account every day and you're seeing this list of people who viewed your profile, why don't you reach back out to them, form a connection with them? Obviously, they were interested in you. Now you can go back very quickly and connect with them because they know who you are. So it's a very easy technique for doing that is checking every day who's viewed your profile and then go view their profile and connect with them.
Okay, so I think you've mentioned this tip on your show before too because I think I remember hearing that before. But that's a great little inside tip on a way to use LinkedIn to connect with people where it's already kind of a warm introduction, if you will.
Yeah. And I think if you're an entrepreneurial mind, if you're out there and you're trying to figure out the connections of value to your profession or to your business, right? And that's really what LinkedIn is about. Then if going into this ecosystem and they're giving you all this data about who is viewing you, then those people who are viewing you have a reason behind it, right? If you do it quickly enough, then you're still top of mind. So if you're not doing it every day, you know, on a very frequent basis, I'd say daily, you know, if you reach out to somebody 2 weeks later, they may have forgot they viewed your profile. But it's so interesting how much data, demographic data, that LinkedIn provides on your profile, not only for your Pulse post, but also for your profile itself. And if you're not checking that, you may be missing out on creating up some fairly valuable connections.
All right. So you've already started to answer my next question, but I'm going to ask it anyways. And that is, as a part of Rainmaker Digital and something that has been talked about extensively on CopyBlogger and something that I am a very firm believer in is owning your content, publishing it on your own platform, not doing the digital sharecropping thing. Mm-hmm. And yet it sounds like there are some benefits and insights to be gained from publishing directly on LinkedIn, which kind of breaks the rule, but maybe for a good reason.
I don't think it breaks the rule, actually. No, I actually think what they did is they made guest posting a lot easier.
Okay.
You know, I mean, any content marketer out there will always say they probably got their start. They started writing on their site, and then they probably did some guest posting, right? And the whole point of social media, guest posting, all of that is to drive traffic back to your site. So what I think with LinkedIn in particular, I don't think it's a form of digital sharecropping. I think it is if you are not focusing on driving them back to your site or to contact you, right? At the end of the day, marketing is communication that inspires action. That's what marketing is. Communication that inspires action. So if you're updating out there, is inspiring action. If you're publishing Pulse post out there, is inspiring action. And that action could be call, visit my profile, share this article, comment, visit my website, download this. It doesn't matter what the call to action is, but it does matter that you have it in there because, again, you are wanting to engage in activity that leads to something. And sharecropping is something that everyone should be concerned with, but people that are will generally repurpose or syndicate their content into the LinkedIn Pulse. Now, let me explain what that means, Scott. Let's say you have a really, really good article that is doing incredibly well on your site. You decide that you're going to put it into LinkedIn Pulse. And actually, LinkedIn Pulse editors like people who syndicate content to them. In fact, they want duplicate content. And Google doesn't penalize it either. So we'll see from time to time people taking existing articles. They will tweak the headline of those articles. They'll tweak the content of those articles to be better in context of Pulse. Because remember, an article on your site has the site around it. So if you just take the article out of it, then you need to tweak it, certainly on the headline, certainly inside of it. And then, of course, finally, is making sure the call to action is in that particular article that you syndicate out. Because again, your call to action may be embedded in your site and not in the content itself. So if you go and syndicate it out there, then you want the call to action embedded in that syndicated post. And syndication is built great companies. Have you ever heard of Buffer before, Scott?
Oh, yeah. I'm a big fan, and I use it and pay for it every month.
Yeah. So Buffer actually went through, and they started writing on their site, and then they went out and syndicated their content. The first time I ever saw Buffer, by the way, was on Business Insider that took a post that they had and syndicated it on Business Insider. The same exact post on Business Insider. Mark Cuban's blog routinely is on Business Insider where they take it with permission and republish it on Business Insider. So syndication is the way to go. But my general rule is that you publish on your site first before you choose to syndicate. Or you do create up a story on Pulse, right? A unique original article. But if that unique original article has a strong call to action back to your site or back to the event that you want to have happen, then you know what? It becomes a native ad for free.
So that's interesting. I'm glad I asked the question, because you're making an important distinction between what could appear to be digital sharecropping, and quite frankly was to an extent my perspective on publishing on LinkedIn, versus syndicating your content, which mm-hmm. is a really a different animal and a different game. So let's talk about that syndication a little bit more for a minute. Because again, we are a technology podcast for non-techies. Mm-hmm. So for everybody's benefit, syndicating is really taking content, as Sean described, that you have already created and put on your site, and then taking that content, tweaking it a little bit so that it's still contextually as relevant as possible, and publishing it somewhere else. The key mm-hmm. to that is usually making sure that that article not only has a call to action, it may be back to your site or it may be something else, but it has a call to action, but also that we have this rel equals canonical thing that points to the original article. So how does that play into LinkedIn?
If you can get away with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't. And that's a problem. I wish they did do that, quite frankly. I wish they would allow you to come in and put in a snippet. And so what I generally recommend, since LinkedIn does not provide the rel canonical attribution, then I generally say to an author, it is best to put that this article originally appeared on XYZ site. Okay. So you're not trying to confuse anyone, but remember the Google index and Bing index as well are super fast. If it's been on your site for a day or two, it's probably been indexed. That's the original source index. Once it gets inside of Pulse, it is then another set of information that, while it shares the same content, remember that Pulse has a whole bunch of other things on the page. They have other stories. They have other things on there. So there is no duplicate penalty for publishing to LinkedIn right now, just like there's not a duplicate penalty for publishing to Medium if you publish to your site first when you go to syndicated. And I can't stress that enough. Publish first to your site, then tweak the content for wherever you choose to syndicate it out to, because wherever you syndicate it to, they're going to have a different context that it's presented in. And when Google hits it, they're going to go back to the source first.
That is great to know. And that is a huge, huge tip. So I think for anybody that's listening to this, you just got a ton of value out of what Sean shared right there. And I learned a thing or two today too, which is nice to know. I was wondering how they could get away with that on Pulse without having the Google penalty, but it makes sense when you describe all the other things that are going on mm-hmm. around it.
And again, I can't stress enough the analytics on this. I mean, you know, especially if you're just starting out trying to see, will this piece of content engage with people? You know, sometimes you can experiment on Pulse too, right? You can just put something out there that's not on your site. You just want to experiment. Are readers engaging with it? Am I getting the right audience? And if it works, then you can take a version of it and, you know, refine it for your particular site. I mean, the nice thing is that, remember, in a lot of this, we are trying to communicate out in ways that inspire action. And we want to test that communication. LinkedIn can be a great test bed. Maybe you have some ideas that you're flirting with and you want to write, you know, just something not as refined as what would be on your site, but, you know, general concepts, et cetera. Maybe you want to experiment with headline ideas. These are things that you can do on Pulse. And by doing so, you can then refine it back on your site as well. So again, there is a asymmetric relationship to this whole ecosystem, so it doesn't have to be just one way. So I would encourage you that if you're doing, you know, any type of marketing, if you will, then use that Pulse network for your content marketing to test things as well as to syndicate things.
Okay, wonderful. I'm gonna diverge for just a minute here into Medium, which came up earlier. Medium.com is a mm-hmm. site where people can also publish original or syndicated content. Does the same duplicate content issue not exist there, or is Correct. There something different if people go to Medium that they need to be aware of?
Now, if you go to Medium, so let's talk about me, because when I got to Medium, I was blown away by its user experience. I mean, seriously, if you're in the techie world, and you want to see the future of publishing platforms, okay, and I'm dead serious, Medium is set a new standard that everyone is racing to catch up. Its inline editing is phenomenal. Forget that old WYSIWYG editor that you used to have to, you know, throw in there. I mean, inline editing is clean. It's beautiful. It looks exactly right. Inline comments. I mean, from a technical standpoint, you should be impressed and mesmerized by the user experience and the UI of Medium. But when you go put content in there, the same rules apply, which is, you know, it's not going to have rel canonical in there, which means that you're probably going to put some sort of attribution, usually at the bottom of it, to indicate that there was an original source there. It does have no follow links. So, of course, you know, any links you put in there have no Google or Bing benefit to them. So you can re-syndicate content into it. And in the case of Medium, I mean, it is just the page. And I would also argue that Medium does not have one thing that LinkedIn really has in its favor. You see, LinkedIn is an ecosystem, a social media ecosystem, right? So you're already connected to people and following, et cetera. Medium's social network is pretty weak in comparison to LinkedIn. So I think a lot of people went into Medium, were excited about it. Some articles really gained traction, especially life stories. I mean, if you have a great life story, then by all means, Medium is going to get you that, okay? Get you that type of traffic because they love life stories there. A good friend of mine wrote a very popular post on Medium about 30 days of doing hot yoga, okay? Every day doing hot yoga and what that was like and why she did and the things that were going on in her life. And it went, you know, huge on Medium. And then if she did the same thing on LinkedIn, nobody would care. So Medium is great for those life stories, great user experience, but it doesn't have that network effect where your people who are wanting to engage with you on a professional business level have, and that's what LinkedIn really solves beautifully. Even I think better than Facebook because, you know, when you go to Facebook, you're there more for personal things. You're not there to figure out, hey, who's going to be the best accountant that's going to help me with my business?
Yeah, right. Well, that's good to know about Medium as well. And yeah, I've seen a lot of the life stories do well there. I posted my very first post on Medium a couple of weeks ago, and it did reasonably well. I was a little surprised, but it was just a very personal post. You know, I'm in the website development business, but I did not feel like spinning up a personal blog for this one idea I had.
Yeah.
So I thought, you know what, I'm going to throw this out on Medium. That's a perfect place for it. And it did get some good traction and was well received. So yeah, it's a really very interesting platform that is worth taking a look at.
But let me tell you where I think the technical angle of these things, and certainly comes back to LinkedIn, because LinkedIn revamped their mobile app experience. They did a really interesting thing. They broke their app up into smaller apps. They really streamlined their app experience because of the mobile consumption. And where I think Medium, from a technical standpoint, is very interesting is that consuming Medium post on a mobile device is as clean as it is on the desktop, right? So this clean design, and I think you'll certainly see this in the LinkedIn Pulse, is this idea of clean design. You know, it's building a website, Scott, sounds scary to me because I have no idea what my categories are supposed to be at the top of the thing, et cetera, which is another trend that I'm starting to see is more of these single page websites that, you know what, we don't need 20 different pages in our site or 100 or 1,000. We're just going to have one page with five different sections, right? And I think, again, Medium is kind of driving that. And I think you see that in the LinkedIn Pulse, where again, very streamlined, very simple, and very, very mobile friendly. And I would say to LinkedIn's credit, their mobile friendliness has been drastically improved. And their mobile app now is actually something that is useful, where quite frankly, before it wasn't. So they made a big investment in there. And I think from a UI standpoint, the LinkedIn app is really well done. And Medium really set that tone for that streamlined, no sidebar, to quote another show on our network, this no sidebar concept.
Well, and yeah, for anybody that if there's anybody out there that still has any doubt about the importance of making your content easily consumable on mobile, it just get over it and get to it, because when we look even at the content that we're driving traffic to on our site, whether it's from LinkedIn or Facebook or anywhere, it's almost, I don't want to say entirely, but it's in the 60 to 75% range most months of mobile consumption.
Yeah, and that's the same on LinkedIn. LinkedIn is closer to 50% and is growing. I know for people that are doing what are called sponsored updates, these are basically paid native ads in the LinkedIn ecosystem. We know that through some fairly large campaigns that over 55 to 65% of the consumption of that content is on a mobile device, which brings in a whole new level thinking, if you will, because you know we don't live, in my opinion now, in a mobile responsive world. We live in a mobile first world. Right?
Yeah.
And mobile first really does change a lot of your thinking because I guarantee you a lot of people will spend time inside of their desktop creating, but their consumption is in mobile. And in a mobile first world, then the consumption of content is uniquely different. It means that if you are putting something out there and there's a link to it, if that link is going to, let's say, a landing page, is that landing page optimized for the mobile experience? And here's another thing for your tech audience. You know, if you go to a site and it asks you, oh, this is my biggest pet peeve. You know, when you go to a site and it says, put in your email and password, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you see that all the time. And on a mobile device, do you know how painful that is trying to remember that, you know, password, trying to, you know, thumb tap your email address? You know, in a mobile first world, maybe instead of asking for email and password, maybe just ask for their cell phone number to log them in. And it sends them an access code to, you know, bypass the portal to get into the actual information. Well, in other words,
that's a smart little UX tip there. Thank you.
Yeah, because, I mean, think about it. If you've got a design or a page that requires any type of form input, you can certainly be smart about that page and say, if it is a mobile device, then I'm going to streamline the process. So if you're already using, let's say, social login buttons, then certainly you could use those on a mobile device. In fact, I'd argue social login makes more sense on a mobile device than it does on a desktop. And if you don't have that, then maybe putting in your cell phone number. And the nice thing about LinkedIn too, if you are thinking about, you know, this logged in experience, LinkedIn makes it very easy to do that social sign up. It's really not as technically complicated as OAuth, which is the protocol they use, tends to be. And the reason I like that is because if you are trying to talk to business people or people that have money, because by the way, the demographics on LinkedIn, since they all have jobs, they actually have demographically more money than the Facebook people do. You know, if you're talking to people that have jobs, then LinkedIn authentication may be better than a Facebook authentication because, you know, Facebook, I think, is personal. LinkedIn, I know, is business. So these are just little things to consider in this mobile first world because gosh knows it's a lot easier to tap a button or key in a 10-digit cell phone number than it is to remember your email address or some password or your street address or any of the other myriad things that are presented on a form.
Yeah, and that is super solid advice. I am the worst. I'm not a great speller to begin with. If it wasn't for spell check, I would have absolutely no business ever writing anything anywhere online. But when you take into account that tiny little keyboard and autocorrect, which is only correcting to the correct thing about half the time for me, doing any kind of input like that on a mobile device can be very painful. So streamlining that for people will do wonders for the time that people are going to spend with your content, what they're going to get out of it, and the likelihood that they will actually take your call to action and do something with it. And I've been an advocate for a long time of saying that when it comes to usability, and all of my clients hear this, if you want people to do what you want them to do on your website, whatever your call to action is, get everything else out of their way. Make it as easy as possible on them to do it. The less they have to distract them, the more likely they will do what you want them to do.
Absolutely. That is absolutely spot on great advice. And I would only add is that you, when you're considering that, think mobile first, not desktop first, because mobile first is where it's at. And so again, you know, if you're designing, if you're looking at a new site, if you're thinking about the user experience, you're going to be looking at a small little screen first and then seeing if it becomes responsive. In fact, I almost want to change it from mobile responsive to desktop responsive, you know, that my mobile experience will, you know, improve as I go to the desktop. But I think you're right. Frictionless, it matters a lot in any user experience. Frictionless experience, I should say. And then, of course, the mobile first attitude, to think of that mobile first, which is going to be much different than a desktop that shows well on a mobile device.
Yeah, yeah. And there's a huge distinction there. So, Sean, I can't believe we've been chatting for almost 30 minutes already. This is the kind of fire hose I like to drink from because I've got a whole bunch of notes and things that I'm going to go do now that I've just not even thought about doing myself. So I know our audience got a lot out of this.
Well, is there, I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate the time. Is there anything else before we wrap up LinkedIn-wise that you'd like to get people thinking about, get them aware of, anything along those lines?
Yeah, I think, you know, it all starts with your profile. I mean, every LinkedIn consultant, by the way, always goes through your profile first because it is the starting point. But if you do it right, and I'm going to give your audience something they can do right now, very quick, okay, on LinkedIn that will help them out. Number one, make sure your photograph shows 70% of your face, okay? If you're standing on top of Mount Everest, that may be an awesome accomplishment, but nobody can see you, okay? Make sure they can see your face in the profile field, in the profile. Number two, make sure that your professional headline, the one underneath your name, is something that has authority for whom you are. If you have an impressive title, use it. If you are a best-selling author, use it. But do these things because, number three, don't be a bozo. Being a bozo is someone who is not trying to live with others in an ecosystem and for purely their own gain and not trying to help others out. So if you put a good picture and a good profile description in there, spend some time on that profile to just make sure it tells the right story about you. And then when you approach people on LinkedIn, do it in a way that shows value and meaning to them. You're going to be extremely successful on that network as well as pretty much any other social network.
Fantastic advice. Now I got to go back and double check my profile too. I know I've got a good picture, but I'm not sure about the headline. So I'm going to go check that out right after we're done here. Sean, thank you again so much for joining us. You guys can catch Sean on The Missing Link, his podcast on the Rainmaker Network. Just go to rainmaker.fm and you can find a link to it right there. And if they want to find you anywhere else online and connect, Sean, other than LinkedIn, where is the best place for them to do that?
No place else but LinkedIn. I'm more than happy. And I'll give you the last little tip. If you want to connect with me on LinkedIn, that's great. Just reference Scott's show because I do not take blind connection requests. And so if you put in there, hey, heard you on Scott's show, love Scott, love what you said, can we connect? I'll be more than happy to connect with you on LinkedIn because that's the best place to find me.
There you go. Now you got the inside scoop on how to connect with Sean.
So, exactly.
Hey, man, thanks again. I really appreciate you coming on today. For everybody else out there, as always, you can connect with me anywhere online at VS Ellis, except Snapchat. I'm VS Ellis 1. I don't know why I couldn't get VS Ellis. And if you have any questions for Sean or any of our past guests, shoot me a question on Twitter, Facebook, wherever you want to send it. Use the hashtag AskTechTrans. I will get a notification and we will get your questions answered on a future episode. Thanks again for joining us and we'll talk to you next week. Technology Translated is brought to you by the Rainmaker Platform, the complete website solution for content marketers and online entrepreneurs. Find out more and take a free 14-day test drive at rainmaker.fm/platform.